Edward Snowden, by showing up in Hong Kong last month after revealing his classified secrets of U.S. domestic surveillance, may have changed China's relationship with the U.S. and Hong Kong's special relationship with the rest of the world. We'll speak with the outgoing U.S. ambassador to Hong Kong, Stephen Young, in just a moment. But the big story is Russia right now. You may recall that it took an invasion of Afghanistan back in 1980 to spoil this global pool party in Moscow.
President Carter won a major victory today in his bid to boycott the Moscow Olympic Games because of the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan.
The United States Olympic Committee has decided not to send a team to the 1980 Summer Games in Moscow.
It's Don Miller, executive director of the U.S. Olympic Committee, announcing the boycott of the 1980 Summer Games, a boycott that more than 60 nations eventually joined. The Soviet Union and more than a dozen other nations retaliated 4 years later by boycotting the 1984 L.A. Olympics. Well, it took only one guy missing a flight at the Moscow airport to raise the prospect of an Olympic boycott in 2014.
I don't want to boycott the Olympics, but I want a policy that will get the Russians' attention.
That's Republican Senator Lindsey Graham on CNN explaining why he's open to the U.S. boycotting the 2014 Winter Games if Russia grants Edward Snowden political asylum. Russia's Vladimir Putin would have us believe that he's just trying to keep Snowden from doing harm to U.S.-Russian relations rather than exploiting him for any propaganda value. But today, Snowden got permission to leave Moscow airport as a possible prelude to eventual political asylum. Is Snowden the seed of a new Cold War, a political ace being played recklessly by Putin and company? Or have the stakes in U.S.-Russian relations been raised by this now fully revealed prospect of high-technology surveillance and cyber warfare? Joining us with more on all this is Kimberly Martin, professor of political science at Barnard College, Columbia University. Kimberly, welcome.
Thank you.
So Snowden being free in the Russian Federation, has Putin marched across a tripwire here on some level?
I don't think so yet. He had no choice under Russian law except to make a decision today, because today was 8 days after the application was filed. And what he has decided on is merely that his application for asylum will be considered. And so that gives Putin 3 months to actually make a real decision about what happens next. And so I think it's without question, it was impossible that Putin would decide at the end of this 8 days to send Snowden back home.
Carter administration said it was impossible not to boycott the 1980 Olympics after the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan. Is now the Obama administration in a corner? They have to retaliate. They have to do something, cancel this summit later this year in Moscow?
I doubt it. I mean, what is really happening, and, you know, if you look at even what the Republicans are saying, Boehner said he wasn't interested in having the boycott of the Olympics. The athletes want to go to the Olympics. The American public wants the Americans to go to the Olympics. So I think that was more a shot across the bow than anything that's seriously going to happen. You know, the action that Obama could take is to not go to Moscow before the G20 meeting in St. Petersburg. But I think by having this be a 3-month process where Putin can just take time to think about what happens next with Snowden, it's essentially letting Obama off the hook, because Obama can say that he can wait to see what really happens in Russia.
So are they trying to dodge the Snowden thing, or is
yes.
Putin? They are, really. But to be clear, you raise the prospect that this summit will be canceled, that Obama will maybe skip it or do some sort of dodge to maybe not be seen glad-handing Vladimir Putin in the midst of all this.
Well, I think Obama is giving back to Putin exactly what Putin is giving Obama. Putin is giving Obama all kinds of uncertainty that may be humiliating for what Obama needs to do politically. And Obama is turning around and having leaks saying, maybe we won't go to the Moscow meeting before the St. Petersburg G20 summit. But they're playing the same game, and it's all diplomatic smoke and mirrors at this point.
But the underscore here is that there's suddenly a front, a fairly confrontational front between the U.S. and Russia regarding domestic surveillance, electronic surveillance, the idea that we're engaged in some sort of cyber confrontation here in the 21st century.
Well, the decline in relations between the U.S. and Russia has been going on for, you know, years. And so I think this is just one more bump in the relationship. And there are so many more important things that are happening, like negotiations over the Iranian nuclear program, negotiations over what might happen with Syria. And so I think that mostly this is more a political hot potato for both sides because of the domestic audience rather than something that actually has real meaning.
So here's the mystery for me. Here's the real head scratcher for me. I mean, during the Cold War, there was a real binding force. The mutual assured destruction, the whole nature of the narrative of the Cold War bound the Soviet Union and the United States together on some level. They had to talk. all of the issues sort of fit into fairly neat categories here. It's a little of this and a little of that in terms of the way Russia and the United States are relating to each other. That seems a little more unstable.
It is unstable, but at the same sense, nobody's talking about war breaking out. And so, you know, you look at things like what the Russians are doing in Syria, and they promise more weapons. But what happened with the weapons that were delivered a couple of weeks ago? The Israelis came in with a strike and destroyed them. And so you start thinking that maybe what Russia's interests are more commercial rather than strategic. It's not that they actually want Syria to be a strong state against the United States. It's that they want to get money for their defense companies that are trying to do exports to keep themselves going.
Is this a win for Putin then today?
It's a minor win for Putin, but he really didn't have a choice. He wasn't going to bow to U.S. pressure and let the United States extradite Snowden. And so he really didn't have a choice. And I think if you look at what's happening with all the things in Putin's life recently, it's all kinds of uncertainty. And I don't think his position is as firm as it used to be, especially what's been happening with domestic politics.
Well, we'll see if it's a win for Edward Snowden going forward. Kimberly Martin, the Ann Whitney Olin Professor of Political Science at Barnard College, Columbia University. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
To China now. It took a queen and the British government of Tony Blair to officially hand over to China the colonial territory of Hong Kong back in 1997, part of the ceremony there, which was supposed to celebrate Hong Kong's special status within China and as something of a free zone, immune to the temptations of the communists in Beijing to meddle or take full control. But it may have taken only one Edward Snowden to unravel 16 years of Hong Kong's apparent autonomy.
The Snowden incident did concern us because we had hoped for better cooperation with them, and we believed China was a factor in them not being able to give us the cooperation on getting him extradited to the United States that we were seeking.
Outgoing U.S. Ambassador to Hong Kong and Macau, Stephen Young, says that the Snowden incident tested the special U.S. relationship with Hong Kong, and Hong Kong, he says, failed.
They did fail the test that we believe that Snowden had broken the law in the United States and should be put up for extradition so he could face charges, and they let him go to Moscow. I've had a dialogue with top officials here about that, and they're somewhat defensive, calling it all worked by rule of law. We suspect that China was a part of this in saying, get the guy out of here, and that's what happened. But there's a little bit of, you know, fuzziness behind the mirror. The bottom line was that we had made a request under an existing extradition agreement, and Hong Kong claimed that we hadn't given him enough evidence and then called me up one Sunday afternoon to say he was on a plane to Moscow.
Well, Ambassador Young, I hate to ask you to speculate as much as I can't resist it, but I'm wondering if Snowden's allegations had been less serious, if they had involved less of a kind of broad swath of the national security establishment, if it might have been more likely that the Chinese government would have allowed Hong Kong to deal with this. The seriousness of Snowden's allegations and revelations and whistleblowing, whatever you want to call it, really evoked the whole U.S.-China relationship on a whole number of levels. And I'm wondering if that was the key.
Well, I'm going to be a little elliptical in my response. We had made some serious claims about Chinese cybersecurity problems, particularly recent messages that we'd seen suggesting that they were hacking into business systems and stealing IPR, which is a major issue for the government as well as the business community. So this was heaven sent for them to sort of say, oh, it's not us, and in fact, you guys. But I think he played to his audience, and it was convenient to them.
What do you think the implications are for Hong Kong? It seems to me on one level, China, by approaching Snowden the way they did, has tried to leave a lot of these questions unsettled, still up in the air, that maybe the test for another day is still out there. But I'm wondering if the U.S. sees that actually, no, there are doors closed now regarding the relationship between Hong Kong and the United States.
I wouldn't be that pessimistic, John. I'm finishing up 3.5 years here, and we have had very robust law enforcement cooperation as well as cooperation in a lot of other areas here in terms of the huge business community, 1,400 companies, 60,000 Americans. So there's a lot going on that is positive. This was a case that probably rose to that level that China couldn't lay off, and decided that his not going back to the United States for justice was the right thing to do. But I guess the bottom line is that when China really wants something that has to do with Hong Kong, they probably have that trump card. The fact is we want to make it used as little as possible because, to us, a Hong Kong that is more open, more engaged with the outside world, and in this case now looking at more democratic institutions, is all playing to values that the United States really appreciates and allows us to have a relationship here that you couldn't have with another city in China.
Well, then, on the way out, let's explore that just a little bit further. As you see Hong Kong departing from there, as you are, is Hong Kong an agent of reform within the People's Republic of China at this point, or are we more on a track where eventually there will be a time when Hong Kong is like any other city in China? It just has a consulate. There's no sort of special diplomatic relationship between Hong Kong and the rest of the world. Which is it?
Well, you know, let me be a little broader on that. It's a great question. I was the head of our special office in Taiwan for 3 years before I came here. And to me, you have in Hong Kong today and in Taiwan two ethnically, linguistically, and culturally Chinese entities that are much more open, and whether it's free press or rule of law or democratic institutions, which are fairly well established in Taiwan and emerging here, these are things that are just not present in China. And I think the fact that a lot of Chinese tourists are visiting Taiwan and Hong Kong and seeing this system, as well as watching television in southern China from Hong Kong, gives them an idea that Chinese people can do things differently.
Ambassador Stephen Young, American Consul General in Hong Kong and Macau, thanks so much.
Very nice talking with you. Thank you.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.